1600 BC, but they're always off by 100 or so years. Then we get a more accurate measure by looking at what the geologists have found. This is amazing. The geologists have looked back and seen the great Santorini volcanic explosion. This Santorini volcano is an island in the Aegean Sea, south around Greece, in the eastern end of the Mediterranean Sea, just north of Egypt. I hope I'm talking loud enough now for everybody. But what happened was in the book of Exodus of the Bible, chapter 9, we hear God speaks to Moses, his chosen leader of the Israelites, and Moses' brother Aaron. And God says to Moses and Aaron, scoop up handfuls of ashes from the furnace and throw them up in the air in the face of Pharaoh, the leader of Egypt, and his magicians. And I will cause all ashes and cinders to come down and cover the entire land of Egypt. Well, at that time, it says, when he threw it up in the air, sure enough, the entire land of Egypt became covered with hot cinders and ash falling down and burning people. This was the fallout from the great Santorini volcanic explosion. This is a caldera, that is a basin of water sitting atop of a huge volcanic mountain. Trying to do two things at once here.
I don't recommend it.
hold on a second. Okay, and when this thing exploded, it had the highest volcanic explosive index, VEI, of anything that the geologists have ever recorded. And they noticed that they were able to detect the approximate VEI, volcanic explosive index, by the geological remains that they've studied, archaeological remains.
I think the information is really, really interesting. The secular timeline that you're talking about is...
It's fascinating. I mean, when you look and they tell us, the geologists tell us, that indeed that Santorini volcano exploded around 1640 BC, and at the time, the arithmetic works out almost perfectly. Go back to 1640 BC... and add that on to 2010, and what you have is 3,650 years.
Hmm.
And this is what we found to be the repetitive period, orbital period of this comet, this huge brown dwarf star on a cometary orbit, 3,660 years. You start with Atlantis, 8,900 BC, the sinking of Atlantis, worldwide destruction. That was 8,900 BC, and then the Noah's flood, which destroyed the entire world. And we'll talk about how that flood occurred too in a second. But that was Noah's flood, 5,300 BC. Then Israel at the destruction, which was called the 10 plagues of Egypt. And when the Israelites were liberated from Egyptian bondage, 1,650 BC. Now, we're coming close to the time when it's coming back again, it's entering our solar system. 2010, 2011, 2012, 2013, somewhere around there, we're going to see the same destruction.
What do you think about that 2012 date?
Well, like Larry Joseph pointed out and Dr. Michio Kaku, the astrophysicist, pointed out on Fox News, he said, this ain't me talking. This is the National Academy of Sciences. Larry Joseph says, it's the National Academy of Sciences is the closest thing we have to a Supreme Court of Science in the United States. They're saying in their articles, and here's the article, showed it right on the screen, where they say we are going to have solar scorching, tremendous solar flares, coronal mass ejections in the year 2012. It's quite predictable because we know when Jupiter's maximum occurs, the last Jupiterian perihelion, that is Jupiter's closest approach to the Sun, was the year 2000. So 2011, 2011 and a half, actually it's an 11 and a half year cycle, I believe. 2011 and a half, or 2011, you're going to see solar scorching, but it doesn't turn on like a light switch. You know, you turn on a dark light switch and instantly it goes from dark to bright.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's more like a dimmer. You turn the dimmer on and you gradually raise the intensity of the dimmer dial. So it gets brighter and brighter, hotter and hotter, and that's what we're seeing right now. Incidentally, this is really another amazing fact. I was saying before that nobody had understood why the sun went quiet. In fact, most people were saying, oh, don't worry about it. The sun went quiet all of a sudden in the year 2008 and 2009. Happy days are here again. No more solar hyperactivity. We can all rest and don't worry about it. And I was the only one saying, wait, something is wrong. The sun should not be, it's in going more and more hyperactive. It's been hyperactive through the first 7 years of this decade, and all of a sudden it switches off. We've got to try to figure out why. So I had theorized the only reason this could happen would be if Planet X had now entered, was coming in below the ecliptic, and it was underneath the skirt of our disk, our ecliptic disk, on which all the planets rotate around the sun, and it was coming in right below Jupiter's orbital path. Well, when that happens, I speculated, or I theorized, that Planet X and its huge entourage of thousands of surrounding comets, like a bee swarm of comets, was right below Jupiter, and as a result of that close proximity to Jupiter, it was exchanging electrical fire with Jupiter. Because whenever planets get close together, the electrical plasma that is surrounding, that's in engulfing and saturating Planet X and its cometary entourage, that electrical plasma begins to discharge to a less positive point, just like your hand discharges when you walk out to a car or you walk across a dry carpet. In wintertime, you grab a doorknob, or you grab the doorknob of your car in the winter. I mean, you get zapped. It really hurts. Your body is actually generating several thousand volts, anywhere between 1,000 to 4,000 volts. But the thing is, there's not enough electrons to kill you, but the voltage is incredibly high. And that's what causes the arc over, as your finger gets very close. During that microsecond of time, point in time, when your finger is about maybe the width of three pieces of paper, the thickness of three pieces of paper, maybe a few hair widths away from that metal, it gets close enough that it reaches the threshold breakover voltage where the arcing occurs, and you have electricity actually jumping the gap between your finger, where all these electrons are collected, gathered statically on your body. They discharge across that gap to the metal, the grounded metal of your car. And that's what causes the sting, several thousand volts sting that you get in your finger. Well, that exact phenomenon occurs on a massive cosmic level when a huge body surrounded by high electrical charge, static electricity like Planet X and its surrounding entourage of comets gets very close to another body that is not electrically charged. All the charge wants to go from the point of excessive accumulation to a point of where there's a deficiency of charge, which is Jupiter. So you had this tremendous fire in discharging from Planet X and its entourage from below up into Jupiter. And in fact, the ancients, McCanny had mentioned that the ancients had talked about this when they saw Planet X coming in thousands of years ago. They recorded the same thing, and their astronomers recorded that they saw discharging, like firing, zapping into Jupiter. And so we have this ancient evidence fortifying our belief that indeed Planet X was discharging into Jupiter. And we have more evidence in the fact that a private astronomer, an amateur astronomer, not NASA, because NASA would never show us their pictures, but this amateur astronomer took pictures of a huge comet collision on July 20th, 2009. This comet collided, crashed into the southern hemisphere of Jupiter. And that was another clue that told me that my theory was correct, that indeed that's why the sun had switched off like a light bulb, because it was now discharging into Jupiter, and it had a temporary flirtation with Jupiter, and that's why its flirtation with the sun was temporarily ended, and therefore the sun went quiet. The sun was like a lost lover, like a spurned lover. But as Planet X and its entourage, its bee swarm of surrounding comets, came closer and closer to Earth, to the sun, to the center of the solar system, then it ceased its flirtation, electrical flirtation with Jupiter, and began to flirt again with the sun. and that's why we picked up it. So my theory has been absolutely proven to be correct. I got the essay that I wrote back in March of 2009 when the sun was quiet. And I can send it to you and show you that. It explained this whole theory that I just outlined to you. So now we can expect really strong hyperactivity, on a scary level. In fact, I have a new theory, and that is that here we are sitting on this block. We'll call it our neighborhood, right?
Mm-hmm.
Our house is on a block, a street, and you have houses down the street from you, the house next door, and then the house next to that house beyond you, and here you are in a street. Well, our solar system is similar. We have planet Earth sitting here revolving around the sun, and then we have next to us is Jupiter revolving in the outer track. Jupiter is the runner in the next track out, and then the next track out from Jupiter is a track, an orbital circle, a ring of debris called the asteroid belt, which ancient historians and scientists today believe is the remains of a collision between Planet X's comets in the past, thousands and thousands of years ago, where the huge planet caused the planet to actually smash into pieces and formed this revolving ring of debris around the sun in the next outer band, the outer band next out from Mars, called the asteroid belt. Okay, and then the next ancient historians like Zechariah Sitchin and others, and scientists today too, believe that there was thousands of years ago when Planet X made previous incursions into our solar system, that when it came through, just like we see with our model of the quarter and the rubber band going around the quarter, we see that Planet X came in around Jupiter, just as the ancient Mesopotamian texts tell us that it came in around Jupiter and punctured our solar system disk. At that time, it smashed into this huge planet called Tiamat, T-A-M-A-T, and caused it to break into pieces, and the pieces are now what is called the asteroid belt. It's a ring of debris, asteroids and rocks and just a mess of broken up matter that is in a ring called the asteroid belt. The next out from the asteroid belt is Jupiter, but this planet X comes in between the asteroid belt and Jupiter, so it comes in between the two runners' tracks, asteroid belt and Jupiter. My theory is that that Planet X is now the new kid on the block. That Planet X is just about coming in from below the ecliptic plane, and is now at shoulder height with Earth, Mars, and Jupiter. That's my theory. Because I've been studying, and I guess nobody, I've never seen any scientist, anybody, and the Weather Channel people, they don't even know what's going on. They do the Weather Channel every day. They show us these weather maps. I'm the only one who's studying these weather maps every day. I've got videotapes, 250 hours of nothing but severe weather reports from the Weather Channel going back from 2004 to 2009. I stopped doing it and stopped taping them in 2009. But it just got an incredible amount of severe weather evidence indicating that indeed something is wrong. But in those videotapes, I've been studying. I've had plenty of opportunities to study the patterns of the jet stream, which are displayed on the weather maps on the Weather Channel. And what I'm seeing is a drastic change in the pattern of those jet stream patterns, indicating to me that Planet X has now come into a different position relative to our ecliptic plane, that disk. Because previously, from 2004 to 2008 and a half, we saw what I call a W in the pattern of the jet stream. It looked like a huge W, with the peak of the letter W going up maybe above, north of the U.S.-Canadian border, and the troughs of the W coming down as far south as New Mexico, Arizona, even deep into deep Texas, Mexico, etc. So you had a huge W painted across the entire face of the United States, even taller and greater in height and depth than the Canadian border and the Mexican border. Now what's happened in the last year is that W has changed into a letter U, not a W anymore, a huge letter U.
Really? This has happened in the past year?
Yeah, in the past year.
Wow. Okay.
We're talking about the jet stream. This W and this letter U represent the outline of the jet stream, which is the cold air that gets pulled down from Canada. Everything above this W, above it, is cold Canadian air. Everything below it is warm air. Well, now the W has changed to a U, twice the height. So if you were to draw a letter capital U, you start up at the upper left-hand corner and draw your pen and run your pen down and make a curve at the very bottom and run it up. Well, the top left-hand corner of that U begins in Alaska. It began in Alaska about a year ago. And the bottom of the U, the trough of that letter U, comes all the way down into the Gulf of Mexico, even as far down as almost the northern end of South America. And the U is not only twice as high, but it's twice as wide. So that the entire U, the left side of the U, starts in Alaska, and it ends way up in the mid-Atlantic Ocean. So you can see you have a letter U, which is twice as wide and twice as high, north to south, as the W. Now there's been another change. What we see now is a bunch of O's, letter O's, again, jet stream. But this is weird because you don't expect to see the jet stream turning into a closed loop like a big O, letter O. But these letter O's are like some very often the size of several states, like the state of Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois. You see a huge O around there, or another O off the east coast, off the coast of New York and New Jersey. You'll see a huge O. They call these upper level lows, and sometimes they're upper level highs. So it's really crazy. I mean, it's the most bizarre, extraordinary patterns you've ever seen. And that to me is tremendous, scientific proof that we've got something going on here. Now there's another drastic change. With these heat waves, what's causing the heat waves is that big U that I was telling you about, which used to be a W, is now essentially become flattened out. It's sort of like a wave, like a ripple, and that ripple is situated way up near the Canadian border, meaning that all the warm air from the south is being pulled up underneath. Remember, you have warm air below the jet stream and cold air above it, so if that jet stream pattern becomes more or less horizontal across, and it's way high, way north, around the supposed approximates the Canadian border, okay? Mm-hmm. Then all that warm air gets pulled up, and that explains why you have this tremendous heat wave all across the U.S., but not only the U.S., it's happening around the world, because remember, the jet stream goes east to west around the northern hemisphere, west to east around the northern hemisphere, travels easterly direction, and it, of course we have the same problem up in Europe. We have tremendous heat in Europe.
We have Russia recording the record temperatures, the hottest it's been in 1,000 years, they're saying.
Right. I'm glad you brought that up. I mean, yeah. You're right. The hottest in 1,000 years in Russia. I mean, the world is in big trouble when something like that happens. I mean, the Russia, they've got fires. The smoke is so intense you can hardly see anybody. People are wearing masks. It's so horrible. I feel so sorry for those people.
It's destroying their grain, their crops. It's going to sting everything. This has been the thing that's really kept me on this. I don't need to look at New World Order. So I don't need to do any of that. I just need to look at the weather.
And also, it's gonna take a lot of people away from the New World Order, because the New World Order is gonna make the New World Order look like an anthill, and all the New World Order thugs are gonna be like a bunch of scared cockroaches running under the woodwork when you turn on the kitchen lights. They're gonna be scurrying away because they're cowards essentially. When they've got the power to bully people and to tyrannize people, they use it abusively, but when something more powerful and fearful comes along, they run away like the cowards that they are. And that's what's going to happen with the New World Order. They're going underground, and all the thugs that they hire are going to be scurrying away and being totally lost and become the pariah of all the citizenry, because people will know that these were not our friends. These were our tyrants, oppressors. So that's what we're going to see on a social level happening as a result of these catastrophic earth events. We're going to be seeing the same kind of fires, unquenchable forest fires in the United States as we're seeing now in Russia. It has to happen because this is a global event. Flooding and droughts occurring simultaneously. Anybody who looks at it has to know that we've got problems. I mean, how can you have record unprecedented flooding simultaneous with record unprecedented droughts?
And record cold in Peru, record hail in the central north of the United States. What is causing the all of this flooding though? Is it just massive amounts of rain or what's causing?
Like the Mesopotamian texts say, you know, that when this planet came in last time, that's one of the first signs you'll see is tremendous record torrential rains and flooding. And what causes it is, again, visualize that W. And on the leading edge of the W, where the letter W is the jet stream across, you know, outlined across the United States map, when the W swings from a trough to a peak in the center, for example, or on the sides of the W, anytime you have a leading or a trailing edge, it sucks warm air up. It creates almost like a vacuum, a pulling force. It sucks up warm, moist air from the Gulf of Mexico, which comes up and resides along that angular line of the center of the W, or the right edge or a left edge of the W. It pulls the warm air up. But inside the W itself, above the line of that slanted portion of the W, is cold, frigid air from the north. So you have cold air meeting warm air. And that's where you get turbulent, tremendous, tumultuous weather. But that's what causes the rain. So all that warm air is drawn upward and it comes down in, you know, torrents. Because it's all being sucked upward like you would suck up water or soda through a straw in a glass. And that's why you get the flooding rains. But at the same time, that warm air that's meeting at the juncture of the W, the cold and the warm air meet, warm air is brought aloft, lots of warm air, lots of moist, warm air, tremendously loaded, saturated with moisture, is brought up to high altitudes where it's extremely cold, and it's instantaneously frozen. It comes down in the size of baseball-size hail, ice stones, softball size. I watch the Weather Channel. I've got numerous recorded reports on my videotape of softball-size hail, grapefruit-size hail, you know, the size of a grapefruit.
Yeah, 20-inch circumference, they said it was falling in South Dakota last week.
That's right. They broke a record. They even, the Weather Channel even had a tape measure on it. They said this is a two-pound hailstone, something like that. It broke all the records. I mean, you're going to have lots of people killed by this stuff.
Yeah.
And it was in the Bible, in the book of Exodus. That's exactly what the hail did. It killed the cattle. It killed lots of people. But, you know, we can be protected by some of it. I had this idea, and getting back to giving people hope, you know, car covers, okay? Visualize this. You have a company that makes car covers, and you have them contract a few prototype car covers that have this sort of like an inflatable raft or a tube, a lining that's sealed, that's acting as a second layer on the inside lining of the car cover, so that it's essentially airtight, or pretty much air. It doesn't have to be completely airtight. And you have a valve where you can plug it into your electric, your cigarette lighter on your car, and an electric pump quickly brings air in, pumps air in between this plastic layer on the inside lining of the car cover and the car cover itself. So first you slip the car cover over your car real fast if you see a hailstorm coming. Then you plug in, pumps it up real fast. Now you've got an air-cushioned car cover. Protect your car, the windows from being smashed into tiny little pieces of glass. Protect your car from having these huge dents all over, looking like somebody took a sledgehammer, and hammered your car all over. You can protect your car from that. So that's another little one of the many measures that we can take to protect ourselves. Another idea is this. I've got these trees behind my house. Luckily, we didn't plant a lot of trees. Most of them are far from the house. People's houses are going to be smashed by these huge trees. I see it every day on the Weather Channel. I mean, I've got so much from all over the country, you name it. huge trees coming down in these windstorms. When they come down, these big oaks, it smashes the house like you would smash a milk carton. Oh, I mean, it just crushes the roof all the way through to the second floor, down to the first floor. People get killed in there, and the house is demolished. Cut down those trees. Cut them down. Have somebody come in, spend the money, have somebody cut them in, cut them down, leave you the wood. Let the wood age. You're going to use it for your fireplace or whatever. Or somebody's going to need it. Now, with my house, I've got this line of Scotch pine trees. This row, they're sort of staggered. It's a staggered row that the builder put up, separating the backyard of my house, back border, from my neighbors. Now, I know what's going to happen. Some of those that are close, fortunately, most of them are far away. But the ones that are close, I'm going to call a tree expert and say, look, here's what I want to do. I want to get these steel cables, that garage door cables, maybe, or even chains, but I think a steel heavy-duty garage door cables would do the trick. Have a tree expert climb up halfway up these huge Scotch pine trees and put a collar around the tree and connect these steel cables from one tree to the next, sort of like a daisy chain, so that the three or four trees which are closest to the house, they might come down and crash the deck of my house. They're all bonded together. They're all linked together so that if one tree starts to sway, it's held up by the other trees, because halfway up, I mean, you know, it's very easy to keep a vertical stick from toppling. It doesn't require much lateral force to keep it vertical. It's only when it comes down, that's when you got a tremendous amount of force to deal with. But if you keep it vertical, it doesn't require more than maybe a steel cable to hold it up there.
What do you think about coming back on Thursday?
Yeah, I would love to.
Okay.
That's I welcome the opportunity to help enlighten people and to warn them.
Okay, well, that sounds great. Yes, so right now we'll plan on having you back on Thursday. If something happens, I'll alert my listeners. But I just have to thank you for coming on the program. I think it's been a great show, and I'm sure that the listeners will have a lot of questions for Thursday. So, you know, on Thursday I'd like to talk a little bit about what's happening in the Gulf. I have 10 seconds left. So I'm going to say goodbye to you, John. Okay, and I'll give you a call this week. Is that all right?
Yes, fine. Thank you.
All right. Good night, everybody. Thanks for tuning in.